Victoria's Premier Jacinta Allan has dismissed a new report claiming the Labor government has invested almost $400 million on treaty negotiation since 2016. The analysis was published by Conservative Analysis Centre, the Institute of Public Affairs. The report also warns the cost of the issue could rise, with Victoria expected to introduce a treaty bill to Parliament later this year. Ms. Allan has dismissed the claim, denying the expense was only to pay for treaty negotiations.
It would be incorrect and indeed completely false to characterise the investment that has been made to date as just being on the negotiations. We've been on a long and steady journey here in Victoria for the past 8 years. It has involved legislation going to the Parliament, two pieces of legislation to set up this framework. It's involved extensive engagement with both Indigenous Victorians but also the entire community.
The New South Wales government is investing $1.5 million to establish a dedicated literature hub next to the State Library of New South Wales, mirroring Victoria's Wheeler Centre. The new hub is scheduled to host 75 literary events over the next 12 months, in addition to Sydney's Signature Writers Festival in May. The state's Art Minister, John Graham, says the hub would provide an inclusive and accessible platform for the state's diverse communities. The federal government is being urged to increase its funding for global health research to better anticipate and prepare for climate-related health issues, antimicrobial resistance, and future pandemics. A new health report commissioned by the Australian Global Health Alliance finds the Australian government spent just under $630 billion on health between 2017 and 2023. About $35 billion was directed to health and medical research, but just $2 billion was specifically set aside for global research. The report finds, despite commendable efforts, Australia's investment in global health research lags behind its international peers. Nationals MP Barnaby Joyce says he looks forward to the debate over emission reduction targets that will be triggered when he introduces his private member's bill today that proposes repealing Australia's emission reduction targets. The newly reformed coalition has yet to determine its position on net zero targets, with differing views held by MPs. Over the weekend, the WA Liberal Party supported a motion to abandon a target of net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050, increasing the pressure on federal opposition leader Susan Ley to drop the policy. Mr. Joyce says, in his view, emission reduction targets is not the way to go.
We are deindustrialising this nation, we are making it weaker, we are making ourselves more vulnerable. And on the way to doing that, we are just absolutely devastating regional communities. They are really beside themselves. It's really important that people in urban areas and understand what's happening in regional areas. And this is, you've got to have some empathy. And more to the point, it doesn't work. You can't run a nation on intermittent power.
A new report has found one in five Australian households are struggling to pay their energy bills, with renters more heavily affected. The report by Energy Consumers Australia shows many of the hardest hit households are not accessing or aware of available retailer or government assistance programs aimed at helping to ease the energy costs. About a third of households reporting hardship had not contacted their retailer about difficulty paying bills, and almost half said that they had not applied for government support. The recommendations for change include introduction of stronger minimum energy performance standards for rental properties. The federal government is introducing legislation this week to bring down costs for prescriptions on the Pharmaceutical Benefits Scheme, PBS. If the bill is passed, prescriptions on the PBS will cost no more than $25 from January next year. The Albanese government says the change would effectively bring PBS medicines to the same price threshold as they were in 2004. For pensioners and concession card holders, PBS medicines would stay at this level of $7.70 until 2030. All medicines that pharmacies can discount can continue to be discounted once the co-payment is cut to $25. Victorian Labor members plan to use this weekend's state conference to demand the federal government move to immediately recognise a Palestinian state. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese said yesterday that the federal government has no immediate plans to recognise a Palestinian state. He says more steps are needed to achieve a two-state solution. The issue was set to be debated at the United Nations conference in New York City later today, 28th of July. Green Senator Jordan Steele John says the federal government needs to do more to end the suffering in Gaza.
Words do not feed starving children. It is time for the Australian government to join with the international community and recognise Palestinian statehood. The recognition of Palestinian statehood is in the ALP platform. It is time that they action it. The Australian government should join with the international community in applying sanctions to the state of Israel.
The president of the European Commission says the new tariffs deal negotiated with the US ends months of uncertainty for industry and consumers. The deal includes a 15% tariff on EU goods entering the US. The agreement came after a meeting between Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen and the United States President Donald Trump in Scotland. Ms. von der Leyen says the deal averts the threatened tariff rate of 30%.
15% is not to be underestimated, but it is the best we could get. It's overall across the board. Important was for us, it includes not only the cars, so go down with the tariffs for cars to 15%, but also all goods and semiconductor and pharma.
Ms. von der Leyen says the US and EU have both agreed to apply zero tariffs to a number of categories of imports, including all aircraft and component parts, certain chemicals, generic pharmaceuticals, semiconductor equipment, and some agricultural products. An Indian director has condemned a film company for re-releasing his 2013 romantic drama with a new ending produced by artificial intelligence without his consent. Ranjana, a Hindi language film about a tragic romance between a Hindu man and a Muslim woman, is to be re-released in Tamil in August. But the company that re-releases the films applied an AI to replace the original ending with a more positive one. The film's director, Anand Rai, says he's heartbroken by the move. Pradeep Dwivedi, the chief executive of Eros Media Group that re-releases films, defended the decision and confirmed the company is considering similar AI treatment to its over 3,000 movie releases. Thailand denies claims by US President Donald Trump that it has agreed to a ceasefire with Cambodia, saying it's waiting on safety assurances for its people. Thailand's acting prime minister says any deal would come after Cambodia must give assurances Thais living along the border will be safe. Cambodia and Thailand each reported the other launched artillery attacks early on Sunday, July 27th, hours after US President said the leaders of both countries had agreed to negotiate a ceasefire. More than 130,000 people have been evacuated from areas on either side of the Thai-Cambodia border, including Borli Chandong.
I pray with hope. Because I'm a Christian, I pray for God to help that both sides can agree to talk and end this war.
The disputed border has been a point of contention for a long time, but the recent attacks are the deadliest to have occurred in more than a decade and were triggered by the death of a Cambodian soldier in May. And in sport, today Pogacar has claimed his fourth Tour de France title, cementing his status as the most dominant rider of his generation. Wout van Aert won stage 21 after taking the lead from Pogacar with 6Ks to go. Pogacar is the sixth rider to win four Tour de France titles, after Chris Froome with 4, Bernard Hinault with 5, Jacques Antequil with 5, and Miguel Indurain with 5. Pogacar says he's overjoyed with the win.
Speechless to win the fourth Tour de France. Six years in a row on a podium, and this one feels especially amazing. And I'm super proud that I can wear this yellow jersey. Now it's time to celebrate. Everybody thinks different how they want to celebrate. I want to celebrate with a peace, have a nice weather, just to enjoy some quiet days at home.
In rugby union, the Wallabies have suffered a heartbreaking series loss to the British and Irish Lions. The team went from an 18-point lead to a 29-26 loss in the second test at the MCG. A last-minute try from Hugo Keegan saw the Lions win the game, although it ended in a controversial circumstances with the Wallabies flanker Carl Tiziano appearing to have been illegally cleaned out in the build-up to the match-winning try. After multiple replays, it was determined there was no illegal contact. And now, in weather for Monday, 28th of July, Thursday Islands are cloudy at 30, Brisbane is sunny at 21, Cairns is partly cloudy at 29, Townsville is mostly sunny at 27, and Sydney is cloudy at 18. Canberra is seeing showers at 11, and Albury-Wodonga is having showers at 13. Melbourne seeing a shower or two at 15, Hobart is developing showers at 14. Adelaide is seeing morning showers at 14. And Perth, much the same, showers at 14. Broome is sunny at 25. Darwin, a possible shower at 31. Alice Springs is windy with showers at 25. And that's all for sport, weather and news. You're listening to NITV Radio. A new report has found that First Nations Australians are twice as likely as other Australians to have trouble accessing their superannuation. The independent research highlights the systemic barriers First Nations peoples face, which include rigid policies, inaccessible customer service, and lack of accountability. Financial counsellors say reforms are badly needed to address this, as NITV Radio reports. The new research has found the nation's $4 trillion superannuation system is failing Indigenous people. The independent research was commissioned by the Super Consumers Australia with Mob Strong Debt Help and Impact Economics and Policy. It's found they are twice as likely to be unable to access their superannuation due to systemic barriers, including rigid policies, inaccessible customer service, and lack of accountability. These barriers are things like rigid ID verification, digital-only processes, and lack of cultural understanding. Alex Price-Bush is the financial counsellor at Indigenous Consumer Assistance Network, ICAN. He's told NITV there's an urgent need for reform.
Time and time again in our casework, we have clients present to access money from whether it's their own super that's been lost or for a family member who's passed away, and the amount of information required and in a lot of circumstances, there's also legal requirements that they need to meet that they simply can't afford even to access smaller amounts of money.
He says ICAN aims to create ways for First Nations people to navigate the system and engage more confidently.
One of the things the report's pushed for is to have a minimum set of customer service standards for super companies and their First Nations clients. I think that would be a great starting point. In addition to that, I think there needs to be better alternatives and things that take into consideration the differences for people that live in those remote communities, whether that's around digital literacy or even their ability to make a phone call.
Mark Holden is the senior solicitor for Mob Strong Debt Help. He's told SBS World News their statistics suggest only 69% of First Nations consumers have a superannuation fund, compared to 87% of their non-First Nations consumers. But for those who do have a super fund, rigid ID verification rules, culturally unsafe customer service, and reliance on digital-only processes means it can take months or even years to access their own money if they're still alive. He says they also found First Nations consumers have a typical balance of less than $22,000 compared to $66,000 for non-First Nations consumers.
We see generations of the First Nations consumers who are not able to access their own money. This is money that's been held on trust for them, for the benefit that's going to be there, that's supposed to be there for them during their time of need, whether it might be severe financial hardship, retirement, or to pass on to their next generation.
Mr. Holden says many are denied access to their own money in retirement during financial hardship or after the death of a loved one. The report also calls for adequately resourcing financial counselling and legal support on superannuation issues for First Nations peoples.
Any delay that we have prolongs the intergenerational trauma that we give our mob, and because this is the money that belongs to them. It belongs to them after the hard work over the years, and it's supposed to be held on trust to them. It will be completely unreasonable and or even unconscionable for super funds to be able to continue this delay in providing First Nations consumers the help they need to be able to access their money when they need it.
His advice to First Nations people would be to visit the government's Money Smart platform online or speak to a local councillor. He says it's important for them to take some time to go through their own super funds to see how they can access and prove their identity, and also for First Nations people to list their super beneficiaries. That story brought together by Helena Kishimorthy, Stephanie Yosoff, and Felicity Ogaliv. Produced by Nori Pakai for NITV Radio.
Join the conversation on radio, online, and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
I'm Nori Pakai, and today I'm joined by Bianca Hunt, presenter and host. You may recognise her from Yukai Footy or I'm a Celebrity and Get Me Out of Here. Thanks for coming on today. You're talking about main character energy.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me.
Can you just introduce yourself a little bit? Who are you? Who's your mum? Where are you from?
Yeah, so Bianca Hunt. I'm a proud Kamilaroi and Barkindji woman on my father's side and a proud Ballardung and Wajuk woman from my mum's side. So Koori, Murray and Noongar. Bit of everything in there, born and raised in Meanjin, Brisbane, but I've been living here in Gadigal country down in Sydney for, I don't know, maybe the last 5 or so years. I've been here, there and everywhere. So Sydney is home to me, but so is back to Brisbane, you know.
How did you come to the decision of putting pen to paper to even start launching this?
Yeah, so late 2023, I actually had a DM on Instagram from my publisher, Izzy, pretty much saying, hey, like, I'm a publisher at Penguin. We would love to have a chat to you about potentially writing a book. And pretty much from there, I got on a call, had a conversation with them. It actually came out of one of their programs where they were asking young people what they want to learn about and what books they want to read and hear about. And the theme of main character energy was actually quite prominent, and they went away and kind of had a little research of the different people that could be able to write a book like this, and they came to me, and I was obviously very honoured to be a part of it. I didn't think that I would write a book at this time, but it just so happened to be, I guess, the right time. It was when the universe said, you know what, this is when your book needs to come out, and it's going to be about main character energy. And I guess when they came with the concept, I was like, absolutely, like, I'm very interested, but it's going to have to be very me. And I want to be able to make this as, yeah, like, as true and honest and genuine to my story and what I wish I could read when I was younger as well, when it comes to either coming into this industry or just navigating life in general. I wanted it to be some harsh truths, but then also a lot of sort of ways to work through things, but not say this is exactly how to do it. We all can figure out and we can all take ownership of our own lives. And I think I wanted to make sure that this book had that those elements in it. So yeah, it was kind of a bit of Penguin's conversation coming over and saying we want a book about main character energy, and then matching with me and I guess, the concepts and ideas and chapters that I wanted to kind of talk to throughout the book.
Mob are such natural-born storytellers. You share a lot of yourself in this book. What do you hope audiences and readers will feel when they get into this?
I think that you're not alone in some of the experiences. You know, we're all living life for the first time, and it's okay to give yourself some grace and not to put yourself on a traditional timeline. Like, some people are very okay with that, and that's fine. Like, I thought by 25 I'd be married, I'd have a few kids, and I'd, you know, have a home and all of this sort of stuff. Like, I had this idea of something that wasn't destined for me, and I think I gave myself a hard time when in reality we're all on different journeys. We all have different things that we're meant to achieve at different points in our lives. So I want people to feel like they're seen in this book, that there's experiences that might relate to them. I really want Black women to be felt and seen throughout the book. This is something that is for everyone. Like, I think there is a story in this book that everyone can relate to at some point throughout the book. But also, you know, it's a safe book for young people to read. It will hopefully empower them and inspire them to know that they get to have these choices in their life and how they navigate their career or just the people around them, to really know that they are the main character in their own life. I think a lot of people get this negative emotional thought when it comes to hearing main character energy, like it's a negative thing or a narcissistic thing. That's not my intention at all with this book. The whole idea of being a main character isn't to be the loudest or the brightest or like the most known person in the room. It's about really owning yourself and knowing who you are and what you bring to the table and just going out and living your life for you. And yeah, I really wanted to bring that across. I also haven't read many books like this, especially from Black authors. So just being able to have that as an option, I think is really cool. And as my first long form book, I wanted to come out with something very empowering, very relatable, and something that anyone could pick up. There's no explicit themes in it. There's nothing that, you know, kids are going to feel uncomfortable reading. It's very much about just getting to know yourself in all its facets and giving yourself that grace that you deserve.
You're clearly very passionate and well-spoken about, like, obviously your own storytelling here. You also not only have the physical book, but also the audio version, and you've voiced it. What was it like reading your own words aloud in a booth?
Yeah, it's super interesting. Like, of course, I mean, I work in TV and I've worked in media for a fair while now. So I've done a bunch of, whether it's on-set, voiceovers, everything in between. It's very different when you are reading your own book, because it's had so many iterations. When I first started writing it, I think my first draft was like 50,000 words, which is a lot. Like, I would have never thought I'd get that many words in general. I think it's a bit over 70,000 words now. But it is quite an interesting one, because you have to go through so many edits before it gets to its final kind of piece. So I'm learning the stories, I'm relearning the stories, I'm being reminded of the things that I already know and being validated in my own experience, but then also knowing, because of those experiences and because of those learnings, that it is going to be useful for the reader. So I guess when I got to the point where I had to read it out loud, there's a difference between writing something and reading it without saying it and then speaking it like verbally, if that makes sense. So it's like, I can read the sentences and it can go into my brain, but the second I'm talking it out loud, that's the difference. So I had to kind of do that across the editing process. I had to read it out loud just to make sure it sounded like me and that it sounded right, if it was spoken out loud. So the process was actually pretty easy. The book is very much written like me. It has tangents. It has, you know, a very true to my talking style. And it's a very easy read. I kind of cut it down into smaller parts purely because I didn't grow up being an avid reader. So I wanted it to be easy for the readers. So yeah, it's a different process. You get emotional, I guess, throughout the recording time as well, because you are reading things that, you know, can be very sentimental to you. And also the realization that this is going out into the world is another thing. But yeah, it was really fun, to be honest. It was 4 days of, I think, 6-hour readings. or something like that. So it was a quite a long process. But yeah, it's done and it's out in the world, so I'm very excited for it.
For our keen readers and listeners who want to find main character energy, where can they find the book or the audio?
Honestly, your best way is to type it into like your search and say Penguin Bianca Hunt, because that will actually come up with all of the different stockists. So if you go onto the main page on Penguin, you can find either your local store or your online store. You could order directly from Penguin, but I found that the easiest way. I also have it in my bio on Instagram, I think, maybe on TikTok. I'm not very familiar with TikTok, so I'm still getting used to it. But I think I've put the links in the bios on that, because that can be easy. And then on audio, I think it's on Audible, Spotify, like it would be on a few different outlets. But yeah, hopefully it's most good bookstores.
I want to thank you for yarning with us today, Bianca.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
That was Bianca Hunt. You can find Main Character Energy, How to Own the Narrative of Your Life, in stores now and also on Audible platforms. You're listening to NITV Radio.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
You're listening to NITV Radio. I'm Nari Pakai and I'm speaking with Hannah Presley, Senior Curator of the upcoming exhibition, The Veil, an exploration of identity, resilience and memory. Here to give us insight is Hannah. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Nari. Thank you for having me.
I gave a little intro there, but can you actually fully introduce yourself to the listeners? Who are you? Who's your mob? Where are you from?
Yeah, no worries. So as you said, I'm Hannah Presley, Senior Curator of Art Museums here at University of Melbourne. My family are Maranyar from the Moyle River region of the Northern Territory, but I grew up in Victoria and Alice Springs, where most of the Presleys are.
You are a senior curator of the exhibition, The Veil. What is the theme and who are the artists who are bringing this exhibition to life?
Yeah, so The Veil is inspired by the concept of the thinning of the veil and that idea that we can access the other world. So lots of cultures around the world have stories and celebrations around this idea. The Celtic tradition of Samhain is celebrated around this time of year, which acknowledges that thinning of the veil. But for, as we know, for lots of Indigenous cultures, they have access to the ancestors, like in their everyday lived experience. But for others, and for some of the artists in the show, their works kind of tease at the edge of that spirit world. So I was really interested in bringing all of that together for the show. So the exhibition brings together six artists, and over the last 12 months or so, I've been working with the wonderful assistant curator, Isabella Hone Saunders, to build the exhibition. It's an incredible list of established artists, including Gunditjmara, Jabwarung and Mira Bullock Tungurung artist, Hayley Miller-Baker. So Hayley talks about the veil in her filmmaking, and her stories are layered with meaning and symbolism, ideas of ritual and cultural inheritance. We're going to be showing two of her previous films alongside her new film, Eternity the Butterfly, which was commissioned for the exhibition. We're also working with Wadi Wadi, Yorta Yorta and Narangeri artist and senior weaver, Glenda Nichols, who will show her work titled The Reflection Net. This was acquired for the collection last year, so it's really exciting to be able to bring that out for people to see. We're also working with the amazing mixed cultural artist Lisa Walk. So she'll be presenting an epic work titled Holding Country, which is another major acquisition into the collection. We're also working with Kuna artist from Maningrida, Lena Yarankura. She's created a whole new suite of work for the show. Lena's a senior weaver, and I just, can't wait for people to actually see what she's created. We also have an amazing Polish artist. Her name is Aneta Garaskalska. She will be presenting her photographic series Mama for the first time in Australia. So that's super exciting. And we'll be working with a brilliant Melbourne-based artist, textile artist Tanik Artside, who will be presenting a series of works, including a new piece created for the exhibition. So we've got six amazing, brilliant artists. each creating very different work, from photography, weaving, film, but all together they really, yeah, come together to speak to this idea of access to the other world, if that makes sense.
So you've been a curator for a number of years now, being the First Nations, or the first First Nations curator for Tracy Moffat at the 57th Venice Biennale, to your curation here for The Veil in 2025. How does your role as a curator inform what we as the public go and see in exhibitions?
It was an amazing experience working as assistant curator on the Venice Biennale, and to work with such an iconic Aboriginal artist was like super memorable. But I've been curating and working in arts for about 20 years or so now. And all of those different experiences definitely come together to inform how I make exhibitions and who I work with, who the artists are that I work with. In my practice, love to build relationships. So Lisa and Glenda, for example, I worked with her in 2012, I think it was, for the Indigenous Art Awards, where she had created her first net. And here we are so many years later, and I'm presenting her work, a magnificent net, in another exhibition. So those relationships mean a lot to me in the curating work that I do. And I always think about how audiences interact with the art. So I'm creating an experience. For this show in particular, it's a very emotive experience, and I want you to be drawn into the worlds that each artist has created through their work. There's also a really big team of professionals that bring this exhibition to life. As the curator, I kind of guide the ideas and work with the artists, but we have an amazing team at the university that work with you know, our collections team that look after the work. We have exhibition managers and, you know, technicians and installers, and so many people come together to create these amazing shows.
We can't get into all of the artists that are in the show, but can you share about any particular works that you're really excited people will be able to see?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously each artist is creating exceptional work, but for me as a curator, commissioning new work is definitely one of the best things I do. It is just a joy to work with an artist as they create and build their new work. So for The Veil, we've commissioned a new work by Hayley Miller-Baker, as I mentioned before, titled Eternity the Butterfly. And seeing this film, I've been lucky enough to have a sneak peek. It will actually be presented on a massive scale in the exhibition, and I just cannot wait for people to sit down and really see this new work and feel a part of it.
When audiences come and see the shows that you have a part in curating, what do you hope that they feel and see when they come?
I think it's different for every exhibition, but I think generally the hope is that people walk in and they get a bit of insight or a bit of an idea from a different perspective. And I think the artists in The Veil each have really established practices. They're talking about things that they are very knowledgeable in, and they're presenting it in a way that they want people to interact with. So I'm always very focused on making sure that the artist's voice definitely comes through and that the intention for their work is present in the gallery, so that when people are coming in, that they've got that direct connection to the artist and the intention of what their work, what they wanted to say. I'm just really excited for everybody to see this show. I think it's a really beautiful, emotional experience with some really powerful artwork. It's really, really special to work with artists from across the country. And in this case, we're bringing an international artist into the exhibition, which is really exciting. And I think in this country, a lot of the times we see Aboriginal artists segregated almost to galleries where they don't get to play with all the other artists. And as important as that is, and I think, you know, there is definitely a place and a time for Aboriginal artists to celebrate their works together. There's something also really special about pulling an exhibition together and having artists where their works talk to each other, not just because they're Indigenous, but because they're creating exceptional works that have storylines that all connect.
So if anyone is seeking out more information, wanting to find out more about the exhibition programming, where can they find more information?
Yes. So jump on the Buxton Contemporary website for info and updates. We'll be updating our programming. We're looking at offering some making workshops with our artists. So definitely keep your eye out for that. And of course, follow us and the artists on socials.
Well, I want to thank you for jumping on and sharing with us today, Hannah.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me. It's, yeah, really exciting. If you're in Melbourne, please come and check out the exhibition.
That was Hannah Presley. The exhibition, The Veil, is going to be at the Buxton Contemporary, exhibiting from the 27th of June to the 1st of November 2025. You're listening to NITV Radio.